If ever a week could sum up the season so far, it was this. Reading fell to a dismal 3-0 defeat at home to Sunderland before downing Wigan courtesy of a Tom Ince free kick to stay third in the table. Welcome to the Tireless Den Podcast, episode 309, the show by Reading fans for Reading fans. I'm your host, Mark Mayer, to talk you through this week and a very mixed week of Reading action. It was as we go into the international break. To do that with me is Adam Jones, one of the Tireless Den's assistant editors. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, not bad, thanks. As you say, you know, it's been a very mixed week. I think Reading are sending us really on a kind of a roller coaster of emotions. So, it's been very mixed. But I think the main thing really is just getting kind of into the international break with 3 points. And that's the most important thing.
Yeah, we'll be talking about the Sunderland and Wigan games in just a moment. There'll also be some mention of Dae Jong in a pub, which is apparently a thing that happened this week. We'll have the mailbag as well from your questions on the Twitter and everything, and a bit of a preview of the international break. But before that, we'll also have Pub Chat, which is back this week. I'll be talking to Pete from the Tireless Den's stock of writers. He'll be telling us about the women's team and the women's season, which got underway this weekend a bit belatedly. So we'll be having a focus on that in a little bit. But first, we'll go into a recap. Before we do that, as always, a quick thank you to our Patreon subscribers and our sponsors, ZCZ Films, particularly as a time which will hopefully be revealed in the next few weeks and months, quite an important time for us to actually have a little bit of money to spend, which hopefully you'll be seeing the fruits of that labour rather soon. So let's get into the recap then and talk about both the Sunderland and the Wigan games.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Well, let's get Sunderland out of the way first, Adam. Let's do it chronologically. Reading 0, Sunderland 3. I think if anyone going into the stadium was expecting that scoreline of either Reading or Sunderland persuasion going into the game, they'd have probably been laughed out of the room, really, because Sunderland, yes, good team, no doubt about that. They're in the playoffs now, actually having drawn at Watford on the weekend after this, so no mugs. I think we all knew that was the case going into the game under a new manager as well. But generally speaking, the way this game started to pan out, I felt like Reading weren't doing too badly because Sunderland had plenty of possession and stuff. I was fine with that. They had plenty of possession in the game before against Middlesbrough, which they lost. I wasn't worried about us playing on the counter. We weren't particularly good at it, if I'm being honest. The passes were a bit wayward. The counter-attacks weren't working. You could tell that Lucas Shaw wasn't really enjoying himself too much. But we changed formation. A couple of things didn't go our way. The end of the half just was a disaster, wasn't it? And Sunderland 2-0 at the break, and that was that almost.
Yeah, it was very disappointing. I think switching to a back four really is probably Paul Ince's biggest mistake of the season, to be honest with you. I think he had to do it at half time. I think in terms of the back five, I know that we weren't playing great, but we limited Sunderland, you know, quite a bit really. And I know that Ellis Sims going off perhaps kind of, you know, persuaded us to go a little bit more attacking, because obviously Ross Stewart's out as well. You know, one reason why we were quite confident coming into this tie, but I thought the best thing to do was just to leave it until half time and then make a couple of changes, because having Tom McIntyre at left back, I just don't think works really. And for me, that's one of the reasons why I think this is probably Paul Ince's and the coaching staff's worst mistake of the season. And there was no real surprise really that we conceded after that kind of switch. I think, you know, waiting until the interval and then bringing kind of Babarahman on would have been the best kind of route to go down. And I think you saw it in both of the goals, actually, that they came from, you know, I know that Tom McIntyre's come in for a lot of stick and he has to take responsibility as well because the defending wasn't good enough. But I think it was caused pretty much by a system failure, both of them goals. So, I was very disappointed coming into half-time, and you just felt after then it was kind of game over, really, even though we had a chance to get back in it. I just felt that it was going to be an insurmountable kind of deficit, really, to make up. So, yeah, it was very disappointing. I think in the second half, we just had to produce some sort of response going into the Wigan game. And I don't think we really got it, to be honest with you. And then they kind of cap it off with a fantastic third goal, which, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about a bit. But again, you know, I have a look at that and, you know, I think players were at fault for that third goal. I don't think it was, in the end, kind of the system change. I think, you know, obviously we had time to become accustomed to it by the time they got their third. And obviously Babarama, I think, is caught quite high up, almost playing as a sort of wing back. You know, he's gone to engage his opponent. But I think McIntyre, no, as the centre back in a back four, he was caught far, far too high up. And, you know, it was really disappointing, really. I know that Sunderland, you know, scored a very good team goal. You know, you could definitely call it a good team goal. And there's, you know, there's no sour grapes for me because it was a good goal. But I think there was, you know, we could have prevented it. So, yeah, it's just very disappointing. And, you know, just thank God that we managed to kind of produce a reaction on the weekend, because we definitely needed it.
I guess that's one of the things about Reading is that, yeah, I agree. It was a great team goal that Sunderland scored. If you score that goal, you're very happy. If you concede that goal, there's plenty of reasons to be unhappy still. It's not like a 40-yard screamer that you hold your hands up and say, fair enough. There were things that Reading players did badly in that sequence. And I think ultimately they just kind of lost their heads in that sense. And it's a theme that we've seen through Reading this season, is that when we get beat, we get beat. Because there is still that mental fragility, there is that. Maybe it is through Paul Ince, and certainly I think he deserves a bit of criticism for the formation change and how that just didn't work. And then, yeah, Reading, it's 3-0, it's game over. And I suppose the question is, do we accept that Sunderland played very well? Because I think they did over the course of the game. Certainly they won a lot of 50-50s, and that's sort of, they fought harder. Do we accept that Sunderland playing very well kind of tones down how much we worry about this game? Or do we actually say, you know, we were bad. Yes, we'll have off days and that sort of stuff, but maybe we shouldn't accept these off days so easily. Maybe we shouldn't actually just kind of brush it off, and therefore we should actually, you know, expect more of the team.
Yeah, I think we should be expecting a little bit more, just a bit of consistency, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, we've been put through a real emotional rollercoaster here, and I know that we definitely take third at this stage. It's pretty much a dream start for us, really. But yeah, I just think that, you know, we could have done it a lot more. I don't think Sunderland made the very best start to the game. They didn't create, you know, that many openings when we played with the back five. And I guess that's down to us a little bit as well. But, you know, as the home team, we should have come out a lot quicker. And, you know, you were just kind of waiting for us really to kind of explode into life, and it never came and it never materialised. And yeah, I think we should be expecting a little bit more. I don't think we can just put it down to Sunderland's performance. I thought they, you know, did perform well, especially when Ellis Sims, you know, went off. They were facing real adversity, really. You know, this is a team, you know, you can't forget that we're playing two up front with the likes of, you know, Stewart and Sims earlier in the season under Alex Neil. So, you know, the fact that they didn't have any strikers on the pitch, you know, you've got to commend their performance and the way that they combined. And they've got, you know, some good ingredients in their team and some good players, but without that kind of focal point, I was impressed that they managed to do so well. But yeah, I do think we should have been doing a lot more. And yeah, I can't just give Sunderland credit for their performance. You know, you've got to look at Reading as well and their shortcomings, because this isn't the first time that we've lost very heavily under Paul Ince. And obviously, going back to last season as well, I don't, you know, obviously we didn't lose against Swansea, but we conceded four, obviously lost 3-0 against Hull City, lost 4-0 against Nottingham Forest, lost 4-1 against Blackpool, lost 4-0 against Rotherham United this season, lost 4-0 against Sheffield United this season. So, yeah, I mean, the defence is a real concern, and we've just got to get some sort of kind of consistency, because we can defend very well on our day, but yeah, there is a part of me that thinks that system change, you know, just, you know, really was to our detriment in the end. And that's why everyone, I think, has to take responsibility, both the management and the players, for that performance, because it just wasn't good enough on the night.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough to say. The funny thing about the table is that we're obviously third, 6 wins from 10, 2 points off second. We actually got a 3-point buffer now to seventh. But then our goal difference is -4. So any team that we're level on points with will be above us, basically. There's only, I think, 3 teams looking at now have a worse goal difference than us. Even Middlesbrough, who are in the relegation zone, have scored more goals and have only conceded 1 more. So they've got a better goal difference than us. It's interesting. It actually kind of reminds me of the Yap Stam team that got to third place. That was actually a bit more of extreme in terms of the goals they conceded, aka the odd 7-0 defeat, and probably a bit more extreme. Well, yeah, definitely more extreme in terms of how you know, boring the football was and that sort of stuff, how much we would grind out wins. But it's interesting. It's only 10 games into the season. And as we saw on Saturday, as we went to Wigan and took a 1-0 victory, Tom Ince with the free kick in the second half, we saw this team just continues to ride that roller coaster. And I think effectively, for now, I think most fans are very happy to deal with it because it's put us there, because there's the ups as well as the downs. It just depends as to how long that lasts. It's a very long season, of course. This, you look at the Championship season in general, Norwich and Sheffield United being top two isn't a surprise at all. Perhaps that's going to be the way it stays. But you look down all the way to teams like West Brom and Middlesbrough struggling. There's not a massive gap Reading down to those sort of teams, kind of 8 points at the moment. It's very plausible to be one of those Championship seasons, kind of like last season, where a team like Luton could be in the playoffs so easily. A team like Nottingham Forest, who were bottom after like 10 games or so, could very easily come up and get promoted or something like that. So we'll just have to wait and see how that all pans out. But Reading are doing okay with it at the moment. Before we talk about the Wigan performance, let's talk about Taiyong in the pub. Seemed to be the most exciting thing that had happened with the man since he took over the club, really turning up in a couple of Wigan pubs, having some photos with some fans, seemed to be getting stuck in, seemed to be enjoying himself, which is good to see. Now, Adam, I'm not going to pretend that I'm the sort of fan who looks at that and thinks, oh, I love the man, he's perfect, everything's fine, because, you know, it's sort of stuff. I'm a bit boring in the sense that it's kind of stuff on the pitch that really matters. But this is nice to see. It's good to actually see him be over in the UK more often these days. Obviously, COVID and stuff probably did, or definitely did, hold him back in the last few years. But here he is. He's being more active, more part of the fans and everything like that. As you know, it's certainly not a bad thing, is it?
No, it's not a bad thing. And look, I've been very critical of Taiyong in recent years, and I don't think it's hard to see why, because of our decline, really. But you know, the fact that he's willing to interact with the fans and that he's willing to take pictures, I think is a good sign. You know, showing that he's engaged with it. And the one thing that I can say throughout his Premiership, actually, one big positive is the fact that he's, you know, he's never run the club for money. He's never run it to make a profit. And that's the other thing that I can really commend him for. It's strange because I still think there are things that we need to do to push standards up at this club, you know, including Taiyong perhaps speaking to the fans. Also, I tweeted out last night and had a few discussions. I still think there is scope to push up standards and to perhaps have him kind of speak out perhaps about his aims and what he intends to do in the future. You know, that will show real fan engagement, and that will also increase bums on the seats as well, because you know, you can't escape from the fact that the SEL still looks a little bit bare. So there's still a lot to do, I think, in terms of getting the fans back, getting the fans engaged. It's a good start, and the fact that he's facilitated the return of Mark Bowen, you know, I'm not sure he's exactly been the mastermind of that. I think that's been Paul Ince, who's been pushing for that. So, you know, the fact that he has facilitated it, though, and has made it a possibility, and he's not been stubborn, I think is another promising sign. But as I say, there's a lot to do to push up standards and to get back where we are. You know, we're Reading Football Club. We want to be, you know, the best we can be off the pitch. We want to be a classy force. And we need to have a real vision and identity for next season when, you know, hopefully we're free of restrictions. So, you know, there's plenty to do. So, you know, it's not a time for us to get carried away. You know, there are, as I say, promising signs, but, you know, plenty to do. And let's hope that we can. Let's hope we see him more in the UK, more active, and let's hope that we can see kind of a plan be put in place for the next few years, because we'll need it.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of people. You were tweeting last night about Taiyong having some more engagement. I can only think that it will probably be through the club. Potentially BBC Berkshire will get a chat with him. I mean, if anyone would like the Dallas then to do it, you're not alone in that, but don't hold your breath is all I'd say for that one. But yeah, let's talk about the game then. Which Taiyong obviously took in and saw and everything. It's great to always see, you know, see him there when we're actually winning. If anyone's worried that he might be losing interest, I think the fact that he sees us win probably does help that a lot. This is a bit of a repeat of the Millwall game, wasn't it? Reading going 1-0 up, obviously later on than we did at the Den, but basically the home team looked okay-ish, but weren't hugely threatening. And Reading, really, I mean, the big story almost out of Reading is that it should have been 2 or 3. Tom Ince missing a big header, About 2 yards out. Yaki Mato went through on goal and had a chance. Tom McIntyre had a big chance, bit of a snapshot from a corner. So failing to make it two or three, I suppose, is a worry, let's face it. But at the same time, Reading won the game. And I suppose the performance is a little bit secondary at this stage of this, or maybe not this stage of the season, but just generally speaking, away games, the performance always is a bit secondary to just getting the victory. And, you know, if the team is still fundamentally trying to fight for survival, it's a massive 3 points towards that.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it is typical Reading, isn't it? It's not really kill a game off. That's why the Blackburn victory was so, so satisfying, because we did manage to kill it off and we actually managed to relax. I don't think us fans have been very relaxed within games, you know, for quite a few years now, going back to Pavlovich, you know. So the fact that we aren't killing off games obviously is a concern. And as you say, it was like a carbon copy really from the Millwall game. Obviously, Jeff Hendrick and Shane Long having chances at the den to put us kind of in a very strong lead. And, you know, you've got to look at Tom Ince and Yaku Mate. You know, they've got to be taking those chances, unfortunately. And the fact that they aren't was a little bit of a surprise, really. Obviously, you know, Tom Ince was full of confidence from his free kick, and Yaku Mate, you'd back him to definitely put it in the back of the net. So it is a little bit of a concern. But as you say, I think the performances at the moment, I think, you know, in terms of the points, I think it's more important at this stage. You know, getting points on the board is going to be very important, because, you know, considering that we are third, we aren't that far away from the relegation zone. So, you know, just tallying up the points, they managed to, you know, edge out wins and get the 3 points, I think is going to be very important throughout this season. So as you say, yeah, the performance is secondary, but it was still, you know, promising that we did manage to keep another clean sheet. I think we were slightly lucky to do so. It's one of those games where it could go one way or the other. But the fact that we did manage to get a clean sheet will be a confidence booster, and I hope that we can kind of get some consistency now, really, in the central defence and ensure that we're not getting hammered 3 or 4 nil. I think that's kind of the main thing for me, is making sure that we remain as tight at the back as possible. And obviously that may be difficult because of our squad depth. It isn't that brilliant in this position when you think of the likes of Liam Moore and Scott Dan being out, and obviously Sam Hutchinson's fitness record isn't the best either. And you look at Tom McIntyre, who picks up injuries as well. So yeah, it's just the defence, I think, is going to be the main source of concern. But yeah, let's hope for some consistency there. But you know, the fact that we did manage to keep a clean sheet is very promising, and hopefully we can take that now throughout the international break and beyond.
Well, it's interesting to say about the clean sheet, because Reading have been involved in 10 games in the league this season, only two of which have seen both teams score, which is a pretty good underlining fact of the fact that Reading get beat. They get beat, properly beat. And yeah, when Reading win, they tend to keep clean sheets. Four so far, I think it is actually, which is a really good tally out of 10 games. But I think my kind of summary takeaway out of this period is that, and it involves both the Sunderland and Wigan games, and actually you can even include Sheffield United in this, and the Millwall games, and Middlesbrough, Cardiff, Stoke, all these teams, is that ultimately when Reading are up against kind of middling, kind of average, mediocre-ish championship teams, having a mediocre-ish kind of championshipy kind of day, when we're playing teams that aren't doing anything special, we tend to beat them. And if that's the case, then we'll do well. We'll certainly stay up if we keep doing that. And that's probably the difference between now and last season, isn't it? Is that Reading had a lot of games last season where they play teams that were nothing special, and then they get beat somehow. They'd find a way to lose. And that's probably, for me, the big takeaway from, you look at the Sunderland game, because Sunderland, I think their fans have probably said it's their best performance of the season, etc. Obviously, Sheffield United had a great game against us. They're a very good team. But when we're playing teams like Wigan, who aren't doing that well and who aren't much special, we'll get the points, or at least we'll be pretty near to getting the points. And I just think that leaves us in such good stead for the, you know, the next few weeks and months if we can keep doing that.
Yeah, 100%. I think coming out on top in these games that go either way will be crucial, really, to our survival, especially with the limited resources that we have. You know, we're not going to, you know, being comfortable leads, you know, for a lot of this season, to be honest with you. I think there'll be quite a few tight games. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we're not that far away from the relegation zone. And and most teams can beat, you know, other teams in the Championship. So coming out on top in these games could, you know, we could look back at this at the end of the season and go, right, that opening period was absolutely crucial, really, to our survival. So the fact that we are in third position at the moment and taking points, I think, is you know, really promising. Obviously, a lot was said about our start not being the hardest. So, you know, making sure that we've got enough points kind of in the bank to then, you know, go to the likes of Watford and Burnley and, you know, treat these as kind of bonus games, I think will be important. And, you know, the fact that there probably won't be that much pressure on us going up to the likes of, you know, Burnley and going to Watford, I think will probably help us to kind of perform well there, and perhaps we could nick one or two points from there. So, yeah, it's a very promising start. And for me, I'm just hoping that we can carry it on. You know, I'm not getting too carried away at the moment. I think it's easier to get down rather than up, obviously, because of the last couple of years. But no, it's a great start, and you've got to commend the team for their work at the moment. And in the end, I think this period could end up being crucial. But it's just a case now of trying to see which three teams are kind of worse than us at this stage and are going to be, you know, lower than us for most of the season. And hopefully we can identify them sooner rather than later.
Yes, well, let's hear from Paul Ince then before we go into the mailbag and hear your questions from the Twitter and the Facebook this week. And later on in the show, we'll be having pub chat about the women's team and going through the big match preview where we'll be playing one of the teams in the relegation zone after the international break.
It's always nice going into this international week to get something positive, because obviously, you know, we know how down the lads were last week, but think of these players, they're not down for long. You know, they've got such a good spirit and togetherness, and in the change room you could sense, you know, that they kind of owe themselves and owe them to the team and owe the fans a response. And a response doesn't always mean 3 points, but it means this is us, this is how we play. You know, we're structured, we press when we press and we defend when we defend. And the only disappointing thing for me, or the negative thing for me, is that we should have killed the game. You know, Thomas should have scored with a header. He's not the greatest hitter of the ball anyway, but he can't miss from 4 or 5 yards. I thought we could score from that. And then obviously Yak comes on and misses another sitter. And that's disappointing, because you can't keep getting away with it.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Just the one question this week from the Twitter call out that we always do for questions. Probably a few reasons for that, but certainly after wins, the mailbag dries up a little bit, which I suppose just shows that when people are satisfied, they're quite happy just to sit back and relax a little bit more in terms of the questions. But Evan Collins tweets us this week with a good question, saying, if every member of the squad was 100% fit, what would your starting 11 be? Now, I think, Adam, we can tick off a couple of these positions quite quickly. I think Joe Lumley's pretty much number one at the moment, unless I'm mistaken. I don't, that debate has quietened down quite nicely in the last couple of weeks, which we don't know if... So long as he's playing well, I'm happy for him to be in the team. Yeard on right back, I think we're in. Babu Rahman left back, I think, are we happy now to say that the kind of junior Hoylett playing left wing back is kind of a second choice or third choice now, but Babu's kind of got the position now after the Wigan game, hasn't he?
Yeah, definitely. I think he'll be much more of an asset at left wing back than he will be as a left back. You could see him getting forward quite well last season. You know, his assist in the Huddersfield home game, you know, just showed you really, you know, that he could get forward well. And you often saw him quite high up the pitch, even in the back four last season. So the fact that he'll be given a licence to be more attacking will make him more effective. Now, I even think back to the Peterborough away game where he crossed in the ball for John Swift, who should have done better. You know, he's very unlucky not to have more assists, to be honest with you. So the fact that he is a left wing back, I think, is promising for us. I think Junior Hoylett has actually done very well so far this season and has definitely not disgraced himself at all. I think giving him a new contract has proven to be a really shrewd decision. And obviously, Nestor Guinness-Walker, I think, will be second or third choice. But, yeah, we've seen some promising signs from him. But, yeah, in terms of a first choice option, I definitely think it's Babu Rahman at left wing back. I think he'll do a very good job for us this season.
In terms of centre backs, Sam Hutchinson central, Tom Holmes kind of the right centre back. I do think we need to stay with the 3-man/5-man defence base probably for the foreseeable future. Because of the quality of the centre backs and the lack of mobility with them, Tom McIntyre being the left centre back is probably what I'd say at the moment. Scott Dan being a reserve, the question saying 100% match fit. But then there's an Abisar as well. So I probably would say actually maybe Naby Sarr ahead of Tom McIntyre for his kind of physical presence, aerial threat, which maybe Hutchinson and Holmes don't quite have as much. It'd be a good problem to have, having them all fit. Scott Dan, I mean, I don't even need to make the joke about Scott Dan being 100% fit and the chances of that. I think Reading fans have seen that as a bit of a joke this season, unfortunately. But yeah, I think Naby Sarr probably would be ahead of Tom McIntyre for me.
Yeah, definitely. I think Naby Sarr, I think at the moment, I feel as though, you know, having Hutchinson, obviously Hutchinson played in defensive midfield at the weekend, but you know, say that we did have Hutchinson and Holmes and McIntyre. I know that Holmes and McIntyre have got a decent amount of kind of championship experience under their belt, you know, in the past couple of seasons, but you feel having Naby Sarr in there instead of McIntyre would give us a nice kind of mix of youth and experience. I think having a couple of kind of older heads in the back line will help us, really. Especially after last season, obviously, Matt Holmes and McIntyre were almost permanent fixtures, really, in there. And obviously, you know, we conceded quite a few goals. So having to, you know, freshen things up a little bit, I think will pay dividends for us. And that's the reason why having Naby Sarr back after the international break will be such a big boost for us. There's also the case that you could put Andy Iedom as a right centre-back, as he was at the weekend, and having Junior Hoyler on the right-hand side as a right wing-back and perhaps taking Tom Holmes out. Obviously, Holmes has had a couple of underwhelming performances, but for his height, I think that you know, perhaps we'll have Holmes in there. But yeah, I think having Iedom right wing-back, Holmes right centre-back, Hutchinson centre-centre-back, Sarr left centre-back, and Babaran at left wing-back, I think is the lineup that I'll go for with Joe Lumley at the moment in goal. Responded very well to his disaster class against Rotherham.
Yeah, for sure. When it comes to the midfield, I think it gets a little bit tricky from then on, doesn't it? Because I would say that the 3-4-3 is what I play ahead of the 3-5-2. Although in reality, that you can basically just put Tom Ince in central midfield if you need to. And then it comes to the question of, we've got Loom, Hendrick and Tyrese Fawner, who have all had their moments. Hendrick is probably the one who misses out on there for me. I think if you've got Loom and Fauna in there, I think that does just about edge it for me. Although I think that kind of when you're trading, Loom obviously has gained a lot of plaudits and a lot of kudos at the team at the moment for his start. But that has waned in the last couple of weeks, kind of as you notice that he's a player with amazing tackle on him, a great physicality, but he can't pass the ball. So it's really difficult to say, yes, definitely him. Jeff Hendrick does bits and pieces, you know, kind of bits and bobs midfielder, but wouldn't say that there's anything that really stands out from his game, maybe his energy, but then his end product doesn't particularly put a great tackle in all the time. So I would probably say I'll go Loom and Fauna. Obviously, you can play all three if you need to, can't you, though? I don't know, which would you prefer out of all three or just two of them?
I think in terms of my midfield lineup, I'd agree with you having Loom and Fauna in there. I don't think Jeff Hendrick has done enough. I think he's an okay player, Jeff Hendrick, but he's not someone who will get you off your seat. Not now, anyway. But no, it's slightly disappointing because I thought that Hendrick will be that real kind of attacking force for us. Kind of, you know, looking at him in pre-season. But you know, in terms of the season so far, I think Loom and Fauna probably get in, and I'd have Tom Ince actually as the attacking midfielder. Obviously, a lot has been said about Ajari, and there's been a lot of debates about him in recent years, but I'm just not sure that his output is good enough, to be honest with you. And this is just not just like kind of basing it on last season's performances where he was poor, but also just, you know, throughout his time here, really, is his output in terms of goals and assists really good enough? You know, other people will judge, but I just don't think he provides enough, really. I think that's why I'd have Ajari on the bench and Hendrick on the bench as well, and have Loom, Fauna and Tom Ince at the moment. I think having Tom Ince in that kind of attacking midfield role will kind of pay dividends for us with his energy and what he can provide, and that kind of attacking urgency from midfield. I think that's much needed.
And then when it comes to up front, Mate, Long, Carroll, of course, Zhao, Hoylett. I do like having Shane Long in there, but I think, I mean, given that this is kind of a bit of a fantasy pick anyway, I would say that I'd have Mate and Ince behind Zhao. Ince can do the hard running. Mate can effectively, that can be a 3-5-2, 3-4-3 very fluidly. Shane Long very narrowly misses out because I think that over 90 minutes, someone like Yaku Mate, fully fit, really going for it, is a bit more of an asset. Long off the bench, or, you know, even Long starting in that formation, Zhao off the bench. I think you've got a lot of options there if everyone's fit. Where Andy Carroll fits in that, again, it doesn't particularly bother me that Andy Carroll wouldn't be in that lineup, because that then becomes a luxury, that then you have these options. You're playing so many games and everything, but I think I'll go Zhao, Mate and Ince as my kind of front three, with Hoylett another option off the bench.
Oh, it's difficult, isn't it? Because you've thrown two formations at me. I think having Yaku Mate in the starting lineup when he's on top form will pay dividends for us. I think that he's a real goal scoring asset. He's been consistent in the goals that he's scored in recent seasons, getting into double figures. And on his day can, as I say, you know, can be a real asset for us, having him in the starting lineup, both as a kind of a centre forward option and someone who can play out wide. It's decent for us. I think Lucas Shaw on his day can be great as well. And I know that, you know, there's been a lot of criticism of him this season, but he does score goals. I can see why there are frustrations with him, but he does score goals, and on his day can be one of the best, you know, championship strikers, really. So having Zhao and Mate in there, I think, you know, for me, I'd definitely have both of them in there. If it was perhaps a 3-5-2, it remains to be seen actually how well both of them can operate together. It's difficult because I think, you know, Hoylett as well has earned his place perhaps in the starting 11. I think that he's been, as I say earlier, I think he's been very decent. But if we're going 3-5-2, I think I'd have perhaps Mate and kind of Shaw in there if they can work well together. And if they don't, then perhaps throw, you know, Shane Long into the mix. I know that he's not the most prolific goal scorer nowadays, but you know, his pressing and his running, I think, will be, you know, good for us as well. So yeah, it's very difficult to pick, isn't it? But you know, imagine if Shaw and Mate can work well together, you know, the goals that they could score together with Tomlinson behind them, that would be a dream, really.
Yeah, there's plenty of options there, aren't there? So if you ever have your questions and thoughts for the show, get them into the Tireless End Facebook and Twitter. There's also the tirelessend@gmail.com to deliver just any opinions on the show, any topics you might want us to cover. Do get in touch, and we always have that weekly call out for questions. Right then, let's get into some pub chat. I'll be talking to Pete about the women's team, and then we'll be back for big match preview.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast, by Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Welcome to Pub Chat, the part of the show where we talk to someone who's a bit more of a specialist on certain regards than just myself and my usual guests. So we've had the talks with the Reading FC community in recent weeks. Always recommend going back and checking that one out, and a couple of other things in the pipeline as well. This week, Pete Matthews joins me from the Tirelest End stock of writers, who is someone who knows all about Reading FC's women's team. So he's here to tell us exactly what we can expect from the Royals this year in the WSL, as ever in the top flight of women's football. Not many championship men's teams have a women's team in the Women's Super League at the moment. But Pete, how would you say Reading are looking this year? We've already had the first game of the season, which was a 4-0 defeat to Man United. Man United are going to be a team that are going to be pushing up the table relatively high this year. But how are Reading looking as we approach the new season?
Thanks, Mark. I think it's going to be a difficult season, actually. So when you said not many teams, Reading are the only championship team without a parent backer in the Premier League, really. So I think that probably, you know, from a finances point of view, we all know where Reading football clubs sit anyway. And it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be a tough season. So Kelly Chambers is going to have to work her usual magic to galvanize a thin and small squad for the forthcoming challenge, I think.
So what's new about Reading's women's team this year? What sort of players have we got? Is there anyone who's the players leaving, players coming? How are we looking in that sense?
We've lost, really, I guess the two players that have gone from the squad from last year are Chloe Peplow, which is really Reading Football Club's choice. That's Kelly's choice, in that she's gone on loan to Crystal Palace for the season. And then there was the sad news of Brooke Chaplin, really, who's had to retire early because of injury. So who now becomes general manager actually on that side. So she still has a role to play, albeit not on the pitch this time. And then incoming, there are six incoming players, being Brooke Hendricks, an American, 29-year-old defender. We've got Jacqueline Burns, the reserve goalkeeper, really, to Grace Maloney. So she's 25 and she's the Northern Ireland goalkeeper. Lauren Wade, also from Northern Ireland, 28-year-old midfielder. Charlie Wellings, a 24-year-old striker who started up front against Manchester United. Talking of Manchester United, Diane Caldwell, who was on the bench but didn't figure in the match, actually is ex-Manchester United. She made 5 appearances for them last season. A well-travelled defender come midfielder. She's 34 now. And then I guess almost 2 returning players, really. Becky Jane, who has signed, who is 30 years old, a fullback that I think spent about 8 years for Reading previously, winning the second division, as it was at the time. And so she's played over 100 games for Reading. She went to Liverpool and then Charlton and is now back at the football club. So, yeah, she's coming back. And then lastly, not really a signing, but a returning player, being Emma Mitchell, or McCundy as she is now. And she's returning from maternity leave. So she's come to boost a much needed squad. And she's also the club captain as well.
Yeah, so there's that 4-0 defeat at Man United to start off. Reading obviously had their first game of the season cancelled because of the passing of the Queen. So next up is Brighton, who are another team who could well be struggling on Sunday afternoon. They're not till the 16th of October. They have the home game against Arsenal scheduled for then. So Reading, what are the kind of realistic expectations this year? Because we are in a situation with, as we've already mentioned, the likes of Man United are serious now. There's always going to be Arsenal and Chelsea. Are teams like Brighton, teams like Leicester, are they going to be the ones that Reading are going to be fighting this year? But the likes of Tottenham and West Ham have maybe taken a step up above Reading now because of the investment. Maybe Aston Villa, another team kind of new on the scene, as it were. Where are Reading going to be able to place themselves amongst these lot?
Yeah, I think it will be a mini league that Reading find themselves in, because as you say, there's some big teams up there. You probably have the Arsenals, the Chelseas, the 2 Manchester teams, fighting for those top 4 positions. You're right, Tottenham looked very impressive last season, and they'll probably look to continue with that. So I think they do find themselves probably in a league that includes the mini league that includes West Ham, but yeah, they've done very well recently. So Leicester, Everton, Brighton, Reading, I think will all be in that mini league. So, it's going to be tough, actually. And you'd said about Aston Villa, and Aston Villa yesterday beat Manchester City 4-3 in a surprise result. And Liverpool beat Chelsea 2-1 yesterday as well. So 2 surprising and almost frightening results, really, for Reading in their quest for that mid-table position, really.
Yeah, for sure. Only one team does get relegated out of the 12-team WSL. It's worth putting forward. Don't want to spend too much on the kind of doom and gloom. If Reading were to be relegated, would there almost be the sense of that being that for the women's team? Because it fighting their way back through the rising teams coming from below. I mean, you look a bit further down, teams like Newcastle are getting serious now. Reading have always just done so well, haven't they, to be a team punching above their weight up against the likes of Arsenal, Chelsea and everything. I suppose is your view of the Women's Championship as a serious league, is that growing now? We haven't mentioned the Euros yet off the back of that. Is that a future that Reading can kind of contemplate, being a team that maybe bounces around between the divisions and everything like that, looking long term?
Yeah, it could be. I think, to be fair, I think Reading will have, I think as Reading fans and as the squad and manager, I think they have to aim to stay in the league this year. That's the, you know, I guess that's the starting point. Anything above the bottom place is almost that starting victory from where they need to continue to build. It will be tough. Yeah, you could see that happening. You're right. Newcastle are certainly Newcastle could be the next team to watch, really. And I think there is going to be heavy investment into that part of the game. So it's going to be tricky. I think I'd like to stay more positive and think that they can stay up this year. So and the championship, there are crowds picked up. I think yesterday Crystal Palace had nearly a couple of thousand of fans in Selhurst Park. So that looks good. But yeah, it's going to be really difficult, Mark. Really difficult for them.
Yeah, how's the state of the WSL and everything looking in general after the Euros in particular? It seems like the crowds are. Obviously, that first weekend being cancelled was really unfortunate because it meant that a lot of crowds weren't able to be as high as they the crowds will have to take place at a future date, basically, all these kind of marquee crowds and marquee games that were scheduled. But how is the Women's Super League looking? Is it a competition that, you know, we've had the dominant teams of late? Is there a chance? And I suppose the opening weekend was a good sign, if anything, that it's not going to be a league where, you know, Chelsea turn up and win like they did last season, 18 games out of 22, and that Arsenal were only 1 point behind them in that, and that a lot of games are foregone conclusions at a WSL level, and that in reality, as much as, you know, we want to be positive about women's football and everything, that does need to change for the future of the league. And is there a sign that that actually can happen now and that there is going to be a really competitive league this year?
Yeah, I agree. I agree from what you said. I think it's important not to get carried away with some of that as well. Some of the big results. You can look at the Women's Super League and think that there is a gap from the top to the bottom, and you can see some, you know, 8-0 results and things like that I don't think particularly helps the game. Equally, if you compare it to the men's Premier League, you could arguably say the top four teams, again, in that division, perhaps five or six teams now, really, to be fair. Again, there's a massive gap to everyone else in the Premier League. And whereas perhaps sometimes it's easy to turn, you know, or criticise some of the 8-0 results that might happen in the Women's Super League, at the same time, you know, Liverpool nearly put double figures past Bournemouth in the Premier League, so in the men's Premier League. So I think there can be parallels that run alongside that. In answer to your question about crowds, I think that missing that first week, although, you know, it, for understandable reasons, was really unfortunate, because that was perhaps the launch for the new women's season on the back of that success of the Euros. And it was a missed opportunity all round, really. So it was a shame. Manchester City play at the Academy Stadium. So that's not the biggest stadium, but they're not filling that for the time being. Manchester United play at Lee Village, which again isn't the biggest stadium. Liverpool were playing at Prenton Park, and I think they had 6,000 fans for their victory yesterday against Chelsea. So it's growing. It is growing, and the popularity is good. And they're nice crowds, and they're nice crowds to be around, and it's a really good family atmosphere. But it needs, yeah, I think they need to push on, and hopefully this will, you know, after the summer success that the Lionesses have had, hopefully this will be the push and drive to take the game to the next level. And, you know, let's keep, as we've said, really, let's keep our fingers crossed that Reading Football Club are part of that next wave.
Certainly. So to finish off then, what's the reason for optimism around Reading FC Women this year? What are the players and the kind of players that we want to be looking out for to be doing well? I think Emma Harris was a bit of a breakthrough last season. There's also the likes of Deanne Rose, the Canadian international, and Emma Mukandi at the back, who's a very experienced player, formerly of Arsenal. So what's the big reason for optimism at Reading this season then?
The big reason for optimism has to be Kelly Chambers, really, the manager. I think she's a really underrated manager. Her track record is amazing. So galvanising that thin squad is what she does best. I don't think we need to panic, because last year it took Reading until their fifth game to score a goal and get off the mark, and they did all right in the end. So I think you've just got to keep that confidence and go with it. The Reading's next match is away to Brighton. That's at the Amex Stadium. That will be, you know, that'll be a test and perhaps a bit more of a benchmark of where they are. As for players to look at, you know, you're right, Deanne Rose, the Canadian gold medalist, unfortunately went off injured on away to Manchester on her own, unchallenged. So that doesn't look good, I think, by the sound of that one. So that's unfortunate. Emma Harris, another up-and-coming centre-forward or striker. She had an anterior cruciate ligament injury last year. So she's coming back from injury. That's an interesting side issue as well with the ACLs, because that's those injuries appear to be a bit more common in the women's game than even in the men's game. So that's something that's being looked into. But there are some good players, you know, Grace Maloney, the goalkeeper, the Irish goalkeeper, Lily Woodham, really highly rated left back, and a joy to watch, really. So Rachel Rowe, hardworking midfield player, Emily Eichland of Norway. So, yeah, some really good players within that squad. And, yeah, Kelly Chambers is going to have to work her magic to, manage expectations and get that team towards a mid-table finish.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for coming on there, Pete. It's been fantastic to have the insight, and certainly we'll be letting fans know how the team get on over the course of the season and when they can get down to the Select Car Leasing Stadium as well to support them.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Rs!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So we have an international break then, Adam. We are not in action until the 1st of October, when Reading have a pair of home games to be looking forward to. Huddersfield at 3 o'clock on the Saturday, and then Norwich at 8 p.m. on the Tuesday. We then go to QPR for a Friday night TV kickoff on the 7th of October. So pretty championship, I would say, these next few games. 2nd, 6th and 23rd coming up. But let's focus on Huddersfield. And the difficult thing, I think, for Huddersfield is that they've got they've just sacked their manager. They've got a caretaker in charge at the moment. It could be someone different by the time that they come to us on that Saturday. So we're in an interesting situation. Apparently, Gary O'Neill is one of the contenders. He's currently caretaker at Bournemouth. So it could be a caretaker carousel going on there. I think for this game, and just generally for the next couple of weeks, Reading can approach it with a lot of comfort, a lot of ease, not complacency at all or anything, but just be satisfied as to where we are and just think that we go into this game as favourites, at home, good crowd and everything. Everyone will be ready for the football after an international break. Just go and give it our all, unlike what we did against Sunderland.
Yeah, I kind of want a Blackburn-esque performance, really. That would be ideal for us, I think. It's going to be difficult, isn't it? Because you just don't know how Huddersfield are going to set up. Really, they could go with a different approach. Really, after the international break, with perhaps a new manager in charge as well. So it is a very difficult one to predict. I think we've got to focus on ourselves because of that. You know, and what we can do, and what we can do to affect the game, you know, the strengths that we have. And just really focus on ourselves. And I think. We can approach it with real optimism as well, especially if the likes of Sarr are back and Ajaria. I think that will be decent for us. I think Shane Long as well, if he's back, that will be another boost for us, giving us more attacking options. So there's plenty of reason for optimism coming into this one. It'll be interesting to see as well whether we do perhaps sign Jordan Ibe. I'm not sure whether he's still on trial. It'll be interesting to see whether there's any transfers perhaps for us. Obviously, we've got one more spot to fill, which is interesting. Perhaps we could fill out with Ibe if we've got enough wages perhaps to spend on him. It's going to be an interesting one, but it's going to be obviously difficult because we don't know how they're going to set up. You know, there's no real certainty. So, it's going to be a difficult game, obviously, on paper. We should probably be taking all 3 points from it, but this is a championship, and any team can take points from any other team on their day. So and Huddersfield at the moment are know, in desperate need of more points, and they've got some decent assets as well. Obviously, losing the likes of Lewis O'Brien and Harry Toffolo is a massive blow for them. I think Toffolo was a real goal-scoring asset for them. I don't think their strikers, the likes of Josh Coroma and Jordan Rose, they didn't score a huge amount, and had to rely on Toffolo a bit to be a real force on that left-hand side. Lewis O'Brien could be a real game-changer on his day as well, so him going to Nottingham Forest is a boost for us coming into that tie. They've still got some good players. Obviously, Andrew from Chelsea can be a real live wire. Sorba Thomas obviously made a real breakthrough last season, so they've got some decent ingredients in there. And some very good players. Obviously, not having Levi Colwill, but they've still got some decent players, and they have the capability of securing a respectable finish. You know, perhaps not playoffs, but they can definitely remain afloat in this division.
Yeah, they aren't the team that got to the playoff final last year, which is fine. That doesn't mean that it's going to be an easy game against the new manager team. It's classically this sort of one all draw, if you think about it that way. But let's do some predictions then. Handbag's got the 1-0 win against Wigan, so he leads the table on 7 points. And none of us said defeat against Sunderland. Adam and Sim got points for Wigan wins. So Ben, myself, and Adam on 4 points behind Handbags. Sim 3, Ollie 2, Westy 1. Adam, what are you going to say for this one?
I mean, I did put a win in the group chat, didn't I, for Wigan, and then I felt a little bit less optimistic. So I'm going to go with optimism again for this one. I think I'll go with a 2-1 victory. Perhaps us scoring first and then they respond, and then we get a late winner with the home crowd behind us. Optimism is my policy at the moment, so I'm going to go for a 2-1 win.
Brilliant. Well, I'm going to say a 2-0 win with a bit of freshness after the international break, some new players maybe coming back, and hopefully all going well. Well, the Tarleton podcast will be back after the Huddersfield game. We'll have a show pre-Norwich, so in between those two games after the international break. We'll obviously, therefore, be having a week off. So thanks, Adam, for coming on this week.
No worries, absolute pleasure, and it's great to talk about a win.
Absolutely. We go into the international break on a high, hopefully, from, I think, pretty much everyone will agree, probably Reading fans certainly are, be hoping England have a good international break and everything. And hopefully Reading get some plenty of players back, and hopefully we go into that Huddersfield game with plenty of encouragement, and just kind of drop that complacency, I think, will be the thing that Paul Lintz will be saying about. And then Huddersfield and Norwich, potentially two games that Reading can build out a nice couple of points or a nice couple of wins in that game. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back in about a fortnight's time. As always, come on, you arse. You smile.